I was told not to rustle the pages, but since the live stream isn't working, I can rustle them. Good morning. My name is Annie Maloney, and I'm the executive director of the Foundation for Sustainable Forests, which I will tell you a little bit more about later here. But first, I wanted to say that although I am not a member of this congregation, As a child, and then later as a teenager and early in my college years, I spent 9 years as a camper and then a counselor at Camp Unirondack, which is a Unitarian Universalist camp up in Lowville, New York. So, and my brother and sister worked there. My cousin was the program director. So I feel very comfortable in this space, and I thank you for welcoming me here this morning. So I'm going to start by reading the quote that's on the cover of your order of service. A thing is right when it tends to preserve the integrity, stability, and beauty of the biotic community. It is wrong when it tends otherwise. And these are the words of Aldo Leopold in his foundational work, A Sand County Almanac, which was published in 1949. It was published, unfortunately, a year after his own passing at the age of 61, when he suffered a heart attack helping a neighbor fight a brush fire. To say that in many ways he was before his time is an understatement, because many other foundational works in conservation and, you know, basically looking for a sustainable relationship with nature didn't come till much later. For example, Rachel Carson published Silent Spring in 1962. And also, to say that Aldo Leopold's words have endured is an understatement as well. So I'll speak a little bit more about that quote in particular, but first I want to say that long before I knew who Aldo Leopold was, long before I understood that there even was a thing called a land ethic, which is a term that Aldo Leopold himself coined, my own personal relationship with the land was shaped through my childhood. Besides that 2 weeks of summer and up in the Adirondacks, I grew up in New York City in Queens. And so my idea of a land ethic really came with a list of don'ts. Don't litter, don't step off the trail. Do recycle. You know, it was these sort of pragmatic things that didn't necessarily help me understand our dependence upon the land and our need for the land to be healthy, for us to be healthy. Later on in college and then an early career as a wilderness guide, that was further shaped by something called the leave no trace ethic. So the idea that if you're going to visit these wild places, do your best to leave no trace. And essentially, when I think about that, really what I learned was similar to the Hippocratic Oath in the medical profession, to try to first do no harm. Do your best to walk through this place or travel through this place without doing any harm. But none of these early brushes with the idea of a land ethic gave me any kind of a positive association. It made me feel guilty sometimes. It was, again, this list of don'ts, this sort of feeling of shame, like, oh no, I left a trace. And I think, when I think about just in general, how can anyone develop a positive relationship and a positive association with anyone or anything if it's coming from a place of guilt or shame? So it was when I got to college as a natural resources major and I was handed the Sand County Almanac by Aldo Leopold in Nat Rees 100, my very first freshman class in the major, that I began to have a more positive thinking, or that book shaped my thinking in a more positive way. And for the first time, I associated a person's relationship with the land with more of a feeling of hope and possibility than shame and guilt, only conceptually. I was a transient college student, but one quote that stood out to me in particular was, "When we see the land as a community to which we belong, we may begin to use it with love and respect." So rather than my prior experiences where this idea that we don't belong here, so do our best not to mess it up while we are here, when we see the land as a community to which we belong, we may begin to use it with love and respect. And this felt like something that I could get on board with, something that I could live by, But again, at that point in my life, it was really only an idea. I can honestly say that I didn't truly begin to understand or even live a land ethic until about 10 years ago when I moved here to Crawford County. And a couple of things happened. First, my husband Pat, thanks for coming. My husband Pat and I bought a piece of land about 10 miles north of here. So now we were suddenly stewards of 150 acres of farm and forest. And I also met Troy Firth and began working for the Foundation for Sustainable Forests, which I'll tell you more about in a moment. On the farm, Pat and I were determined to be the best possible stewards of the land. Coincidentally, he was also a natural resources major, different school, different institution. Not too many of those majors out there. So we worked hard to convert the fields from their former uses to something that we thought would be more ecologically sustainable, more compatible with our own values, with our own land ethic. 10 years later, what that looks like is we've got about 70 sheep, hair sheep, Katahdins, on the farm, the ewes that are going to get ready for spring lambing. They're in rotational grazing, which is a form of restorative agriculture. So it's not perfect, but through that practice, we are working to restore soil health. And there's far less, for example, herbicide applications happening. There's none on those fields anymore. And then in our woods, we make maple syrup. And Pat has been, he's a forester in his own right, and he can make decisions, and he'll make good decisions about what to do in our woods. But for the past 10 years, what our woods needed was time. Time after a degrading harvest. It just needed time to recover, and so no action is our action at the moment. And again, it's not perfect. There are trade-offs. For example, the decision to treat the invasive plants in the understory of our woods. It's not a perfect or joyful decision because it involves herbicide in itself, but it's a cost and a benefit. And I'm sharing this with you because all of this is shaped by the idea of the land ethic and that idea of a thing is right when it tends to preserve the integrity, stability, and beauty. And I think there is intention in the order of those three things of the biotic community. And so if Pat and I, as practitioners and stewards of our land, are learning a lot as we go and trying to do what we think is the right thing to do at any given time. But now I'll shift to talking about Troy Firth and the Foundation for Sustainable Forests, which some of you in the room I know are familiar and some are not, but it is a nonprofit based right here in Crawford County and out west in Spartansburg, in Spartansburg, with the mission to protect forested land and support forest livelihoods through practices that maintain the long-term health of the land. Troy and his late wife, Lynn, founded it 20 years ago. And Troy himself, he began his career as a forester rather organically. He's been in maple syrup production for over 40 years. For much of his career, he was the second largest producer in the state. I think now he's the third largest. And then he also had purchased a lot of forested land over the years, especially back when land was a lot cheaper than it is now, and that was a more feasible pursuit. But as a landowner of many, many acres of forested land, he set out to take care of those lands in addition to making maple syrup on them. And he didn't like what he saw in the status quo. And so for Troy, becoming a forester was not a classic formal training. It was born out of an admirable mix of humility, observation, and willingness to try different approaches. You might say that he is a true, intelligent tinkerer. And that's a reference to my third, and I promise you, final Aldo Leopold quote of the morning, which is, "To keep every cog and wheel is the first precaution of intelligent tinkering." And here's what I love about that quote. I first learned it when the Foundation for a Sustainable Forest invited the tribal forester of the Menominee Forest in Wisconsin to come to the area to our annual conference to speak, Marshall Picor. And he included that quote, "The Menominee Forest in Wisconsin is one of the very best examples of long-term thoughtful management of a forest to to truly strike a balance between getting what we need from the forest to live and thrive, but also to give back to the forest and keep it a healthy ecosystem. So when Marshall brought that quote, "to keep every cog and wheel is the first precaution of intelligent tinkering," I really paid attention. And I think the significance of that quote is the use of tinkering, because it acknowledges that as a person on the land, caring for the land is anything but prescriptive or formulaic. In fact, my background is in forest ecology. I have a PhD in forest ecology, and Troy Firth and I have been in this like 10-year slow motion tug of war, where I say, you know, forestry should be informed by science, and he says forestry is an art. And I'm sorry he's not here to hear me say this, but I think he's right. In fact, I know that he's right. Yes, it should be informed by science, but it absolutely is an art, and it should be informed by observation, what you see, what the forest can give, what that forest needs. And so therefore, I think tinkering is a very appropriate term in this case. And then to keep every cog and wheel reminds us how important it is in our uses of and our interaction with the land that we must first and foremost keep the system functionally intact. First, do no harm. So it requires, as a manager, that we take a holistic view of the land. We cannot come into a forest, for example, with one issue on our mind and address just the one issue. We have to keep the holistic big picture in mind. And we will make mistakes. That's why we're tinkering. We're not going to be perfect. We will make mistakes, but if we can learn from those and recognize them, then the system can remain intact. So most importantly about Troy and what I've admired about him as a forest manager, both on his own land, but also as the manager of the forests that the Foundation for Sustainable Forests owns and manages, is that he has always prioritized their long-term health over short-term gain. There is nothing easy about that choice. Our economic system is not designed to celebrate that or make that an easy choice. And I respect and recognize everyone who's in the forest industry who has had to make hard choices on that line just to make their livelihoods. But Troy has put himself out on the line to make sure that the long-term health of the land remains intact at each point. Some would call it more idealistic than realistic, but Troy has lived it for over 40 years. And I would counter that it is this kind of land ethic that is exactly what we all need for a healthy future. We need more stewards of the lands who will listen and observe first, but rather than coming into a forest and thinking, I know what this forest is going to need, to make short-term sacrifices for long-term benefits, and who recognize when no action is exactly the action that is needed. I liken our species to busy beavers. We kind of always need to do something. So take up a new hobby. If your forest and your land needs no action, learn to knit, do something different to keep yourselves busy for the sake of the land. Another key embodiment of the land ethic that I have learned from Troy over the years and is present in Alda Leopold's writing is the idea of emphasis on intuition. By nature, our species seems to be drawn to rules and order. Many landowners or forest managers will frame their questions when they're talking in the woods, walking in the woods with us and asking questions about what to do on their own land. They want to hear, most often, rules. They want to hear, what are the best practices that I should follow? And those are good questions. There's nothing wrong with that in any specific moment in time. But Troy is more likely, much to everybody's frustration, when he's asked those kinds of questions, to reply with the quote that's on the cover of the order of service. So rather than giving you the paint by numbers that you might have been looking for, he's going to tell you a thing is right when it tends to preserve the integrity, stability, and biotic community of, or beauty of the biotic community. It is wrong when it tends otherwise. He's very intentional about this. Because he wants you to maintain an adaptive mindset. He wants you to remember that what is right for the forest today may not be right for the forest tomorrow, because all ecosystems, the urban ecosystem of Meadville, all ecosystems are inherently complex, and the only constant is change. And so as stewards of the land, it's incredibly important that we maintain that adaptive mindset. It is not going to be paint by numbers. And if we can do that, if we can adapt to the changes that we see and alter our stewardship accordingly, then we're working alongside that inherent complexity of the ecosystem rather than battling against it. So this is a season of peace, a season of reflection. I was intentional in my selection of Wendell Berry's poem. And Wendell and Troy are friends. It's pretty interesting. Their two personalities are not necessarily the same, but there's a real mutual respect for this concept of the land ethic and how each of them have carried it out in their lives. But also in this season of giving and receiving, I just want all of us to remember, myself included, I'm not excluded from this, that the land, a community to which we belong, gives us so much. You don't have to look very far around this sanctuary to realize that, all of the things that have come from the land. It gives us so much, and beautifully, it continues to have so much to give. It is an abundant, the landscape around us is very abundant. I challenge all of us to give it that love and respect of which Otto Leopold writes in return. And I also want to come back to something I said at the beginning that I really believe, that no great lasting change comes from a list of don't do this and don't do that. And it doesn't come from guilt and it doesn't come from shame. As you move through, whether it's the urban ecosystem of Meadville or the surrounding farms and fields, I encourage you to ponder your own relationship with the land and to cultivate a more positive association if need be. One that is of empowerment, one of hope. The idea that we can be a positive influence on the landscape and we do belong here. Be intelligent tinkerers, like Troy, and give back to the land as much as you can. Thank you.